It was written 20 years ago, written by a girl whose face I know. Still I wonder, maybe I'm not as good as I thought. It said things are peace, things are beauty, things of love, they elude me. Maybe I'm not as good.
I Dream of Peace by Deborah Penberthy. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, coming at you live from Skid Row Studios. And I'm in the studio with my co-host, Earlene Anthony. Our call-in number is 1-800-893-9562. Now, this week on the Qumran Report, we will continue our conversation with Suzette Shaw and Ann McCall, and we are joined by Catherine McNinney. Welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Now, before we get into our discussion, I would like to ask the question, how many of you are familiar with Biddy Mason?
I am familiar with Biddy Mason. Uh-huh.
Biddy Mason.
Yeah.
And, okay, what I would like to do, I'd like to play a three-minute clip from an interview I did with Reverend Cecil Chip Murray a few months ago about Biddy Mason, and we'll come back. Now, can you talk a little about Biddy Mason and the founding of FAME?
Biddy Mason was a slave woman who was taken by a Mormon slave caravan from the Deep South up to the San Fernando Valley. She did not want to ride into slavery. So she asked the master if she could walk as a sheep herder. He gave her permission. So she walked some 2,000 miles on the trip rather than ride into slavery. When they arrived, the Emancipation Proclamation had been signed, setting slaves legally free. She knew that the slave master was mustering the slaves to take them back to Alabama, the Deep South, rather than obey the new constitutional amendment. So she and three other women managed to escape and were given protective custody in the Los Angeles County Jail. The chief jailkeeper said he understood, and so he locked them up. And then after the caravan left to go back south, she was released. She went on coming to Los Angeles and working as a midwife. And rather than accepting money, she accepted land in payment for her services. She became the first black wealthy woman in then the territory of California and one of the few wealthy women, period. Down on 7th and Spring Street, there's the Biddy Mason Wall, which is celebrating her contributions. because out of her wealth, she helped the homeless and the poor and the hungry. She started a church in her home, later to become the first Black church in Los Angeles. Later, the movement was to 8th and Town Street after her death. Many will remember Bishop H.H. Brookins. Reverend H.H. Brookins was pastor there. Then in 1968, they moved to the present location of First AME Church on South Harvard near Weston and Adams. And that is the history. But she says, we have to understand with Biddy Mason, that's right, it is the open hand that is blessed. For with the closed hand, nothing can get out, but nothing can get in either. Mm-hmm. Biddy Mason was a rare human being.
Okay, so that's
very beautiful. Yeah. He told that story well, didn't he?
Wow.
About Biddy Mason. So that we see that before we had a Skid Row in the downtown area, mm-hmm. women like Biddy Mason played a very important part in helping the homeless. Yes, so I think when we talk about women's, we should really try to get her into the discussion, about it.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that you're saying that. And it's beautiful that you actually brought her up, because we were actually talking about her this morning in our housing meeting at LA Can. But it is important. You're so right. It is important. I mean, I'm just thinking as you're saying that, wow, I mean, like, there should be a mural of her in Skid Row right now. It should be like... We need a mural of her. We need to her as an anthem to our women's equality in Skid Row, and as a empowerment, subliminal message for us and so forth.
I mean, I know for exactly. me, I'd never heard of her until just now. I am so inspired.
I'm going to take you to see your wall. Yeah.
I want
to
be Biddy.
Biddy Junior.
I'm Biddy Junior. There we go. But I mean, it just inspires me to keep doing what I'm doing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just, wow.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to say anything else.
Yeah. That's no, incredible. I happened upon her mural when I first came down here, just inadvertently, just walking down the streets. And yes, because it's kind of in a secluded area. And unless you know, so it's kind of an interesting.
And to me, the important thing about it is she didn't push anything about gender, the mm-hmm. areas. All mm-hmm. for men's and mm-hmm. all that. She didn't look at it like that.
Right.
And I think that should give us an approach to dealing with everybody in the Skid Row area.
Right.
Without separating the men's from the women's, et cetera, right. like that. Everybody's struggling down there.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, so I'm delighted to have with us in the studio Suzette Shaw, Ann McCall, and Catherine McNinney. Welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you.
Now, the first thing that I want to discuss is what are some of the major issues facing the women's of Skid Row? We could start and go around.
Well, I just want to say that, you just mentioned that about Miss Biddy and that, and she didn't want to separate from the men and so forth. And that's important that we acknowledge that, because we are a community. And so in order to function as a community, we got to acknowledge the fact that, there's more than one gender, and that we are a gender of male and females and transsexuals and so on and so forth. I mean, we're a community. So I just feel that we need to, raise the voice and support and empower one another as females, as males, and stand in solidarity. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and in regards to some of the issues in the community, is that's one of the main issues, I think, is just learning how to be cohesive in a growing community. Again, I was in a meeting this morning. We were talking about the history of Skid Row, and I tell folks, and we were talking about how Skid Row has primarily been a male-populated community and so on and so forth. But I tell people, that's why I talk about the other face of Skid Row, the new face of Skid Row, the fact that so many of us women, like Anne and myself, have ended up in a Skid Row. Catherine inadvertently ended up in a Skid Row. But how we ended up here, after we're part of products of the debacle of the middle class system and what's going on in the larger sectors of society that will make the ills where, you know, trickle down where a Skid Row would then be a community where women who used to be, call themselves middle class, would end up in a place like a Skid Row. Feel me? Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. I think one of the biggest issue facing men and women on Skid Row is the mental illness, because that's the majority of people who are down there. Thanks to the deregulation, I can never say that word, but anyway, Reagan in the 80s
Reagan-esque
opened up the, you know, mental hospitals and said, here's your drugs, have a nice life, you know, you can make it on your own. and I think that is the biggest crisis there. And how we're going to deal with that, I don't know. My first thought is there definitely needs to be more mental health people down there, doctors dealing with this. You have to start with the root cause before you can get them out of it.
Yeah.
And so it's just so daunting. There's so many things down there. But for me, that's the biggest issue.
That's true.
But if I break it down, that seems to be my big phrase lately is breaking it down, because the picture is so big. It's really about relationship. It's really about getting to know the people there and understanding, and beginning to work on really changing lives, the lives that you can. There's some people that choose not to change.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be on the streets. Okay. But the ones who do want to get out, you got to start at the root. You got to start with relationship. But the biggest thing is there has to be more resources to deal with the mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Because until you can't help somebody until they're dealing with their mental health issues. And it is huge. Huge. You know, I think the percentage is 79%. Could be wrong about that. Of the women, just the women on Skid Row, are dealing with mental health issues. Throw on top of that the daily traumas that happen every moment, drugs, you know, whatever else they're trying to survive.
Yeah.
So it's huge. But
I came on the show today for two reasons. First, because you asked me and I admire you, so of course I said yes. But second because Anne said something during the last show. You were talking about women's issues as well, and you said, well, you know, what I want is for all women to get out of there. And I've been thinking about that all week, and so I have a response to that. And I wrote it down because I don't want to miss anything. But there is a divide, and I want to mention that between these two ladies and myself. And I think it's important to acknowledge that. I chose to be there. I sought out housing there, and I wanted to live there. These two ladies did not want to end up there. So that's a difference between myself and some other women there. So I want to be very open about that, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's my comment. It's specifically, one more thing before I read my comment. On my way here tonight, I drove down San Pedro Street over to 7th. I saw probably about 7 or 8 children with their mothers walking on San Pedro. So there are a lot of mothers with children on the streets, getting services, just walking the streets right now, a lot more than a few years ago. They're there. Mm-hmm. They're not going anywhere. I'm certainly not going anywhere. I chose to be there. I'm not leaving. Okay, so I've been doing some ongoing research about all the buildings in the neighborhood, meaning who lives where. There are currently no low-income family units or any subsidized family housing in all of Skid Row, but there are a handful of so-called market rate buildings in Skid Row in which many families and children live. My building is one of them, the Little Tokyo Lofts, which is right next door to the Downtown Women's Center on San Pedro. There are also market rate artist lofts across the street where families live. My experience living in Skid Row and in getting to know many people, most of whom live in subsidized housing, is that this current structure is incredibly divisive and unhealthy for the community. There should be an immediate change of course regarding new low-income and subsidized housing. I would like to see the city of LA stop building housing for the flavor of the month single adult high needs individual. Currently, the flavor of the month are veterans. Great, as they should be. But let's build subsidized family veterans housing. It is appalling to me as a Skid Row resident that housing is currently structured so that the well-to-do can live in family units, but the low income cannot. Mm. It breeds resentment, depression, suicide, and depravity, and it needs to end now.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Very good.
Good point.
Very good.
Excellent.
Now, a couple of things I would like to say is I think when you look at the Skid Row area, it's got to be at least 85% African American mm-hmm. Down there, mm-hmm. in, especially in the encampments. Mm-hmm. And I used to be of the opinion about individuals transitioning out, you know, especially mm-hmm. those individuals who was economically able to transition out. But now, you know, I'm really beginning to rethink that, because I think one of the things that Skid Row has going for it mm-hmm. is numbers. You know, and so I think the goal is to figure out how do we empower these individuals that are there without yep. losing numbers. Because Dr. Claude Anderson, if you're familiar with him, he talked about the ethnic control of your own communities. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. that's one thing all over the country that the African-American lacks. Mm-hmm. We don't have an ethnic community. We used to have places out here like Watts, mm-hmm. that used to be basically an African-American community. Mm-hmm. We got a little piece of Leimert Park, and we got areas, maybe Inglewood, somewhere in there. But I think it's very important. I think that is because I think we need to control the economic life of what's happening down mm-hmm. here. So what do that mean? Yeah. Does that mean making it like any other ethnic community mm-hmm. that you got mm-hmm. here? What some of the things that I think we need is the stores that we, these little markets that we have down there, mm-hmm. I think we should get rid of all of those and have community stores. Okay. We should have stores that is controlled by the community so you can bring the prices down and determine what kind of healthy food you can have there, even if that means boycotting these little stores mm-hmm. down there. Because mm-hmm. These stores are a central part of these economically deprived mm-hmm. communities yeah. all over the United States. When you go to a black community, the ones who control the economic life, mm-hmm. they pull all of the mm-hmm. economics out of there. They don't live there or put anything there. Another thing that I think we need is we need some training centers down there. We used to have the Libby Center that sits over there where LAMP is on Main Street. Mm-hmm. That used to be a training center to help people get their GED and train them for some short-term computer jobs, and all of that is gone. Well, now, they're on the outside. You can go up Wilshire, you see them everywhere. Mm-hmm. So, well, mm-hmm.
okay, here's ahead. My deal is mm-hmm. and I, you know, I've been in Holly Mitchell yeah. in front of her a couple of different times, and I said, how is it that Skid Row houses the highest homeless population as well as people living in poverty, and yet there's no federal job training program? Why is exactly. there no workforce investment action program? You know, if this were any other ethnicity, and I'm going to be point blank, you know, there's millions and millions and millions of dollars that yeah. get invested into poor communities, just not in black communities. And so why is there not a workforce investment action federal job training program in Skid Row? There's one outside of the community, but again, it's not connected to the needs of the people in the community. And this is one of the biggest issues, is because we have people who are running federal job training programs, but then they're not, they don't look like us, and nor do they care to give us money and dollars to help support our needs.
Yeah. And I think one of the reasons, one of the main reasons down there is because the economic life of Skid Row is being controlled by, you could say, the business community, mm-hmm. the service providers, mm-hmm. et cetera, mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. And one of the main problems down here, and I constantly see this, and then I want to touch on the veteran thing a minute, is the fact that these particular sectors mm-hmm. cannot unify cannot work as a unit. And that's very important to work as a unit, because as long as they divided, well, you got the service providers over here, the activists over here, the business community, man in the street, you can't accomplish nothing, especially with the huge business community that have a huge amount of money that can wait people out until they go through different transitions.
Can I just add to that? That hopefully I won't lose my train of thought. Sorry. You know, my first thought when you said that is, once again, you know, you don't have private sectors, public sectors building anything, investing any money. You have the police force, all the politicians, most of them, I shouldn't say all, most, they don't see Skid Row as viable. They don't see a lot of the people there as worthwhile. They're just, I mean, if you read, what am I trying to say here? Okay, you read any comments in any newspaper on any blog, they're bums, they're no good, they're the, you have to change the thought process of the people who are in charge of the money and the police force. And like Suzette said last week, we have to be allowed to come to the table and show them that we are people. I went through Skid Row. Hey, hello. When I tell people that, they're shocked. They're like, you? Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? Yeah, I'm the face of Skid Row. Mm-hmm. And so the thing is, you've got to bring that to the table. We have to be allowed to get to the table and say, you know what? You got to start viewing these people as human beings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but when there's a lot of money to be made in pimping poor people, you know, I mean, that's capitalism. It's its own form of capitalism itself, you know?
Yeah, without
a doubt.
But
at the same time, at the same time, but let the community of Skid Row come to the table with the powers that be and say, you know, and have their questions answered. It's being heard.
Yeah, but
it's being heard and it's being accepted that, they are broken, suffering, and are people making horrible, you know, horrible choices?
Here's the process that I want to touch on the veteran.
Does that make any sense what I said?
It makes plenty of sense. Mm-hmm. But see, there's a meeting coming up on the 19th of June, I believe. And it's a meeting with these five councilmen headed up by Jose Weezer. It's in the downtown news thing today. Mm-hmm. Now, it's very important not only to go to these meetings and raise your voice. Mm-hmm. Now, to go to these meetings and to be activists and raise your voice and walk away means absolutely nothing.
That's right.
So when what I'm trying to say, it's very important to develop proposals around certain issues that you want to achieve, you know, and make sure. It's a lot of smart, brilliant people down in Skid Row.
Absolutely.
The problem I have.
Absolutely.
You know.
Leaders.
Is, and the individuals who, you see, too many times you have, you're not putting your best people, you're not using your best brain power to develop tactics. Mm-hmm. That's why it's so important to approach this as a unit.
Right.
And the community know what the problems is.
Mm-hmm,
see, put this in, and see, I feel a lot of people, we got to get off our knees and we got to learn the process.
That's
and get away from the rhetoric, you know, get away from all the rhetoric and get some solid proposals, hit meetings, know the process,
that's
to achieve what you want to achieve, and we can, and that's how you're going
to achieve. And sound articulate, and
I
agree.
I have to say that I've been going to the L.A. Central Providers Collaborative meetings once a month with all the big wigs sit there at these meetings, and I don't know, Ja was the one who ended up getting me in the building, so, but the thing is that, I'm probably one of the few people from the community who's actually sitting in these meetings. And it's just, the irony is that, you know, I'm sitting at the table with people who were trying to get me thrown out on the streets a few years ago. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But now, I mean, like I was at the meeting last month in Lhasa, you know, gave a presentation on the homeless count, you know, and then we started talking about chronically homeless and the chronically homeless and all of that. And then those are just triggers for me. I'm going to tell you, as a woman struggling with my own mental health challenges, it's like, because you just end up, I said, you're ending up, and I wrote them a long letter in regards to this. I said, I want to be part of the solution. I said, because the way that the system is set up currently, you are only, you're leaving people out of the demographic, out of the equation, who should be at the, who should be first and foremost. Women like myself and Anne, who ended up in a skid row, who, you know, we were working women, we were taxpaying women, so on and so forth. And then when we needed the system says, well, you know, no, there's no place for you to go. But the way that the chronically homeless list and so forth is set up is like, you know, like myself, you know, I was sleeping on people's floors, sleeping on people's couches, so on and so forth. They were temporary. It wasn't my home, but and I would maybe staying at 5, 10 plus, you know, places per month. But because I was staying in someone's home on their floor or on their couch, I wasn't considered homeless. So then when I did have to register for housing, I didn't know that there was a pimping game that, you know, getting housed. And so, you know, so then what happens is that, oh, well, you don't meet the criteria because you're not chronically homeless. I'm not chronically homeless. I'm homeless, bro. What? I'm homeless, period.
And that's what I mean about power is in numbers and it is in organizing the right way. See, I have no problem with marching and all of that. But, you know, personally, I think that was a tactic that was effective during the 60s by Dr. King to bring certain things to the media that they didn't control. But see, now we got a different situation with the internet. See, we got to get down to some concrete planning and how to implement these planning, how to identify the smartest people in the community, regardless of what color or what gender and all that kind of stuff. And organize them into a unit, you know, and these are the ones that go out there with these proposals and pursue the funds. They spent $118 million last year on the homeless, and most of it went to the police force.
Right, that's correct.
And why did most of them go there? Simply because they are better organized.
But they're given $3.7 million for garbage cans.
Wasn't in LA County.
Well, not exactly.
Well, see, that particular, the $3.7 million that came, right? Look, it was $750,000 for health, for health and hygiene. None of the Skid Row residents put in any proposals to get that. See, what I'm trying, all I'm trying to say is that we got to organize a tight unit. But let me, one more quick thing before I get to the next question. I want to deal with why the veteran thing is so important. See,
it's very important.
Why the veterans, and we start talking about this 5 years ago, see, that is the inward to the largest part of the military budget. The largest part of the United States budget is the military. Over half of the budget that we got in this country goes to the military. Now, they have traumatized these young men's comeback that we see them laying all under the bridges and stuff like that. See, so that is an issue that you can push. You can make the homeless problem, the homeless veteran problem. Then you can get the federal government that got an unlimited amount of money. Then you ride that. You tie all of the homeless issues, the women, in, you tie it into that so you can get some of them funds.
But I have to tell you, I have to tell you, Melvin, what's going on right now, and I've been in some of these meetings, and, and I've had friends who ended up being displaced from a skid row because what they do is they close, you know, they continually close women's programs in order, and I mean, I'm not saying anti-veterans and so forth, but I'm just bringing light to the situation. They'll close a program where women were housed to then make more room for a veteran program or what have you. And so women continually get displaced from one entity to another entity until they're completely just displaced all over again. And it starts all the cycle all over again, rather than creating other uplifting narratives and situations.
I want to speak to that too.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
I'm feeling what you're saying. Okay. And by the way, what I said was in no way,
about
trying
veterans.
to say that we shouldn't put veterans first, because I do think that they should be put first. But what where I'm coming from, off of what Suzette was saying and off of what you're saying too, is that, you know, Skid Row has got over 100 service providers, nonprofit organizations. I myself have a nonprofit one, so I'm, you know, maybe 101. But so how the neighborhood operates is there are trends in funding for housing and dealing with the homeless population and the mentally ill and very ill population. And there's trends. So the neighborhood, which is controlled by the service providers, moves on those trends. They move on where the funding is coming from, not what is best for the community, not what is best for the health and the uplifting of the community, not what the residents want and need, like more women's programs, more, you know, something. Where are these, what's going on with the, what's up with all the kids on the street? Mm-hmm. Where are the provisions for these women with kids? Mm-hmm. There are none. Mm-hmm. So that's what I have a big problem with, and that's what needs to change, is we need to focus on what's best for the community, not what is the trend of funding, because that might not be good for the community.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me this. Let me tell you how you ride the veterans thing. See, veterans thing is just like the prison thing. You got all genders. You got everybody. You ride through the female veterans and the female family. You push. You utilize that.
Yeah,
but you tie that into it.
But Melvin, mm-hmm. when I was staying at the Rest Hotel, it was predominantly for veterans, right? It was predominantly for veterans. But how was the program altogether set up to get in the Rest Hotel? Now, John Kelly, who is a coordinator for the alumni services at LA Mission, he brought me down here from a women's safe house. Mm-hmm. And he was creating beds at that particular time for women at the Rest Hotel. And I think he probably still does. Because, as we talked about before, the program is written by and large for the program is written for the men. So he, on the backside, was saying, well, hey, we need to have at least maybe a couple of beds set aside for women, because where are these mm-hmm. women going to go? So again, the program is set up by and large for the veterans, like at a Rest Hotel type of program. So mm-hmm. the veterans can come in and they can hang out, you know, we can just mm-hmm. chill because, mm-hmm. hey, we running this up in here and we know the money coming that y'all getting is for us. So we running this show right here, right now. Mm-hmm. But then they'll bring in women like myself and they
and
run you. And was there when
too.
I was there as well. They'll run you and they'll run you and they run you, run you, run you, run you. And then it's just a rat race. It's a rat race. So you're already mentally... You're so broken. What I'm trying to say mm-hmm. is that they use the way that they run the programs is not like, well, you know what? We've got this veterans program here. Mm-hmm. So let's bring women and set up women. And no. It's like, hey, we got this veteran programs here. We got all these men and let's just bring in more men. That's, you know what I'm saying? I mean, they don't.
Okay.
You know?
Well, let's figure out one of the things that should be on the table then is how to solve this particular problem.
Mm-hmm.
What can the women's of Skid Row do,
mm-hmm.
you know, to solve this problem that we're talking about now to empower? Yes, because that's what we want
to
do.
Well, right? First we have to identify, you know, what is our demographic as far as when it comes to female veterans. I mean, I don't know exactly the full demographic of the need.
Because see, the bottom line, be real, and it's very important to be real about certain situations. The United States government have made certain decisions about when they look at the Skid Row population, especially in relationship to the male population mm-hmm. in Los Angeles, always been about, have no conscience about people laying in the street.
Mm.
They may have a little conscience about women's and females,
no,
right?
They don't.
But at
no,
the
they
top,
don't.
We may have a little, mm-mm. but at the top of the list is that they're gonna feel the reason they're so concerned about the veterans, not that they love the veterans. Mm-mm. They know that inside of these veterans' head, if any violent revolution's gonna pop up, it's going to pop up from the veterans community that
well,
have been
I'm
trained.
I'm
going to
tell you, I was at a meeting a couple of months or two or three mm-hmm. months ago, and they mm-hmm. were talking about this whole veterans initiative. Again, this is one of this collaborative meeting that I'm talking about. And, you know, and they're like, well, you know, we're going to be, there's going to be a big shindig coming down the pipe where we're going to be.
Well, who are these people you're talking about?
I'm talking about all these bigwigs running these shows on the Skid Row.
Yeah, because
I'm not trying to give out data.
Right,
you know where I'm coming from.
Right, because see, we're dealing with situations right now all of this is tied into the homeless. One of the most important ones is this big vet center that's sitting out there by UCLA, all of that land that were deeded to veterans right now. They got a lawsuit in and they're fighting for that because they got all of these private organizations on there. But that's a whole nother show.
Come to the meeting at noon at it's at the Downtown Women's Center. It's Thursday. I'm inviting you to their meeting.
I hear what you're saying, because I think what it is, going back to your proposal, is that whenever this issue comes up, and I'm going to try to phrase this, when they want to close something for the women and open something for the vets, there needs to be somebody at the table to say, okay.
Exactly.
So it needs to be part of the proposal.
Exactly.
And I think another thing is, I just really commend you, Catherine, for having so much. I really need to get the figures in my head. I have them all over the place. But anyway, what I was going to say is the powers that be, whoever can change this, we got to hit them between the eyes with the figures. Got to bring up the figures. Okay, you've got X amount of beds for the men, but what about the women? What about the women and children? This is how much they have. We need to change this.
Exactly.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I was at a meeting 2 months ago. 2 months ago, and this was, and then the lady with Lhasa was like, okay, so can you tell me, are there any changes going on?
Yeah.
Now, I'm the newbie, and I'm a Skid Row resident. I'm sitting at the table with all these people who are running the doggone show all over the community. Mm-hmm. And I'm the only one who raised my hand to say, they closed this program where women used to stay, and then they closed this program where women used to stay. Why? How do I know this? Because a friend that I know who stayed at this program and then was displaced from that program, then went to this program, and now was displaced from that program, and now lives in Las Vegas and has to start all over again, and is displaced to this.
Well, let me ask this question.
Wait. Mm-hmm. And so, again, I'm the only one at the table who is the women.
Let me ask this question. The question that I want to ask is, what we're talking about now. Because a lot of it, we know the problems because it's been amplified. It's in all of the papers. It's time to.
This is not in the papers.
Some of the papers I read.
Okay. Let me just say this. Underground papers.
I don't want to get us too far on the points, because we're talking about how we can come up with some solutions, right? So the question I want to ask is, how can we push for more housing for females in the Skid Row area, especially those with kids?
Yeah.
What's the approach?
I say something before we answer that question? The Union Rescue Mission was opened in 1893. In 1994, to demonstrate vision and commitment, URM opened its $29 million, 225,000 square feet facility at 545 South San Pedro. Especially designed to meet the needs of today's homeless population, especially women and children, okay? The building can shelter 1,000 per night, including a computer-based learning center, library, children's play area, study area, and gymnasium. Mm. Now, wait, on 1998, on the fourth floor, 84 more beds were added. In 2007, on the fourth floor, an exercise room was added. Now, is any of that available to the women at the URM?
No.
What?
Okay, the other thing is, they do not house 1,000 people a night. Mm-hmm. The women's shelter, the women's dorm, has 150 beds. Where do you get 1,000? There may be another 150 men or less.
I think total they have.
This was in there.
Not every night. No, okay. Because they don't let anybody come in. They don't put them downstairs in the day room.
I understand this.
And so, you know, and the women and children, there are never as many women and children as there are single women and men. There's no way there's 1,000 every night.
What is our approach? I want to get into, these brilliant creative mind. What are some of the things that we can do to empower? What the question I just asked, how can we create more housing for females and for females with, you know, single heads of the household and families? What's the approach?
Well, you know, we're working on a program right now, a project called Our Skid Row, and how we're trying to plan out our community for the future. And so this is a very and we're working within the structure of the system to try and create this. I mean, and that's a whole like big, and I'll have the person who heads this. If you like, I can have her come on next week. I can look into having her come on next week. Okay. Teresa Wing with our Skid Row.
Okay.
She's an architect. But what I'm trying to get to is that one of the things is, you know, we have to pay attention to what's going on in the community in the sense of trying to find more affordable spots in the community where we can put together another housing program for women and so forth. But then we also have to be careful about who is starting up our programs. Somebody was on Facebook the other day saying, well, I'm going around Skid Row tomorrow and I'm going to be collecting 2,000 signatures.
I'm familiar with that.
Thing is that this person is not somebody. This person not even tied into what's, you know.
See, when I look at a community, like, this is what I think one of the things that would be so helpful, you know, if the women's, it's a question I just asked, you know, so we can take some concrete step. Do we need to sit down and say, look, we just like they got the Midnight Mission and the Los Angeles Mission, we need four or five ones that just concentrate on female facility.
But we don't need any more missions.
Well, hold on. We got the Women's Center over there. Do we need two or three more Women's Center? This is what I'm trying to get at.
Need to be separate from the men.
Okay.
One, any recovery program you go through, the men are always separate from the women. I'm making a general statement. They do not encourage that men and women be together in recovery. Okay. So the other thing is...
Mm-hmm. And why do you disagree?
Because I live in Skid Row in a regular market rate building. You're talking about high needs people with severe either mental illness or drug addiction. What about just poor people? They shouldn't have to live in an SRO where no kids or no woman or no man is allowed. That's ridiculous. It's a community, just like any other community,
I'm the only one sitting here who lives in an SRO. Okay, I live in an SRO, and I'm one of the few females on my floor. I understand where Catherine's coming from, but I'm going to say that's an issue. I live in a 100-year-old building, basically. There's no air conditioning. I have no, this time of year, it gets very, very hot. I can't open my door.
It's a safety. Let me just add, women need to feel safe and protected where they are.
Okay.
There wasn't anywhere on Skid Row I felt safe and protected.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to come back. We're going to come back in a minute to this. Where's our time going now? Hey, we got OG on the line. How you doing, OG?
Hi,
OG.
Hello.
Hey,
G. Yes, sir.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I do want to weigh in on that conversation. I talk a lot of stuff about the women, but
they're
very true, you know, when it comes to that, man, because in all them buildings, man, you know, there's a lot of pornography running rampant through there and everything like that. So, you know, so a lot of women are sitting up in SROs and not comfortable.
Okay, good.
I would like to say I put a plug out for the event this weekend coming up.
You know you can.
Okay, so, you know, June 13th ain't going to be 20th. But we're celebrating on the 13th. It's still going to be Father's Day event. But we're going to do it Juneteenth on the 13th. And we're going to talk a little bit about fathers during that period of time, you know, when they found they were free. I was just talking to one of the homeboys having a kid and doing slavery. And so on the 20th, we'll talk a little bit more about fathers in this day and age. So we're going to have a lot of performers. Looking for you to be there, Mel. When you gonna be there?
Yeah, Catherine. I'm gonna try to make it. Catherine and Suzette.
Yeah, so we're gonna have games doing like from 10 to 12 on both days. It'll be a basketball game, and then from 12 on, we're gonna have speakers and entertainers and that kind of stuff. You can just
and where's this?
We'll
at?
Have food, Gladys tables, Park. Chairs, all that good stuff.
Gladys Park, right?
Mm-hmm. Gladys Park. Mm-hmm. So all you guys that want to do something, we're looking for, I'm looking to do an art exhibit. So I think Chris Colmore, I'll talk to him. a cruise show, so we're looking to do a couple art exhibits. A Piece of the Hood will be there. We do the coloring contest. We're also going to be working on the mural that we have there.
Okay.
We're putting a mural up there now. So we'll have opportunities if people want to come by and do a little painting that day. You know, we're still looking for a few more entertainers. You know, you entertainers is.
All right.
Trying to get Willis for the puppet show, you know, but the puppet show didn't. Unless you want to do a puppet show, Melvin, I know you know how to do that.
Well, we talked to Willis yesterday on the show. Hey, now, OG, how many years have you had this going?
This going on 14 years, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's another good thing I want to say because, you know, Father's Day, because, you know, Mother's Day, all everything out on the street. Easter, the old Skid Row blocked off. Christmas, when Father's Day comes, nothing going on and none of them missions. Because they try to tell fathers that we dead beat dads on Skid Row. But mm-hmm. That was the one thing we wanted to point out, that there's a lot of fathers on Skid Row. They don't get it twisted. We love kids, even though the system don't love kids. That's why you don't see nothing at the parks for kids. You don't mm-hmm. even see a swing on Skid Row, do you? A sandbox.
Right.
Nothing. Okay, so we want to let people know that there's a lot of proud fathers on Skid Row. And also I want to say this, too. A lot of you women have daddies. Yeah. Catherine, Suzette.
Well, you gotta have a daddy to get here.
So. Okay, daddy. So, you women,
my daddy.
You got on Father's Day, okay?
Thank you.
Okay,
thank
OG.
You.
Hey, thank you. Yeah. Looking forward to seeing you out there Saturday.
Later, G. I just want to say one thing. We don't need more missions because what's going on with the missions is those are just money makers for people to continue on building up their capitalistic pimping system of poor people. And we don't need more missions. We need housing. People need houses.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay.
And a house is not housing. Is not a bedroom with a cot and if you're lucky you get a bathroom. A house is a house.
And this is what I was talking about early, being able to put these important issues in a proposal.
Yes.
And present them to the right sectors and stuff
resellers.
Like that. Look, let me just a good point that you made on that, because we need to hear that. You know, people need to say that. We got enough missions. We got too many of that. We need something else new. But let me ask this, because a couple more things we want to go to is how can we assist the females coming out of prison and end up down here? They have to make that adjustment. These are women's too. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think
on
once
that?
Again, the women coming out of prison have no business on Skid Row. They need to be in like a halfway house. They need to be
no doubt.
That's
but see,
so frustrating to me that they go from prison to it's another prison.
Well, AB 109 is setting up programs for that's one of the reasons why some of the other women who are being displaced from, because they're setting up programs for AB 109 people in, like, say, Weingart or at the Joshua House or something like that. Mm-hmm. So they're setting up AB 109 programs for, I believe, people who are coming out of the system. I believe for women as well.
They need that. They need programs specifically for
but
them.
But the reality of the situation now is that we do have a large amount of females that's coming out of prison that's down on that Skid Row area.
Investigate it more, yeah.
Listen,
we do.
When you say coming down, you mean do they have coming into housing or coming in on the streets? What do you mean, Melvin?
Both. But mainly they're coming through the program at the Wine Guard mm-hmm. and then a lot of the SROs mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. on program. All I'm trying to say is that how do we meet the needs of those to make things better for them, make it easier for them to transition back into the community, back to their
families.
Once again, that's what I'm talking about.
Once again, it comes back to having the right people there to direct them and engage with them to know what their specific needs are.
I need
mental health people mm-hmm. to help with the mental problems. You need special providers for the people coming out of prison.
Well, let me ask you this question.
I want to speak to that really quickly, too.
Okay, and then I'll
go right over to Karen.
Why can't a lot of the women that's concerned form what we talked about early, structures and proposals to deal with what you're just talking about?
Well,
why do we have to look for the
Because you're dealing with people who are broken, for one. When you hit Skid Row,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you were in hell. You're trying to survive. I'm not saying there aren't women sitting down there today that can't get involved, mm-hmm. but the majority of women are spending every day in survival mode. Survival mode is food, shelter, clothing.
Okay.
Catherine
wants to say something.
I do.
And then we go to you, Sue.
This was brought to my attention by a group of students that I've gotten to know that come down with their teacher once a year. From a Christian college, Christian high school up in Northern California. And they come down and they pass out hygiene kits and whatnot. Anyway, one of the students asked me, who's reaching out to the sex workers on the streets? And I thought about it and nothing came to mind. There is no entity or no group that I'm aware of that is reaching out to this group of women. And that concerns me, and I think that it should be considered because I see that a lot. I see a lot of women with pimps, and it's too intimidating for me to approach them because I wouldn't want to get between that relationship, but let's be real. That's going on a lot.
But that usually evolves into that when they hit Skid Row.
Yeah, but it happens quickly because I've seen it. It's on my street.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
One thing is that, you know, again, I've been going to the central provider meetings and they had a probation department at the last meeting and so forth. I mean, they all came in, including the director, and they're looking to help collaborate with the various entities in Skid Row to help help the people who are transitioning, the AB 109ers who are transitioning into the system. So they're looking for a support system. Okay. And also LA CAN, we work in conjunction with helping to support the AB 109ers and everything too. So we're part of the solution in that as well. And secondly, as far as sex workers, that's a good point to make. One of the things is that, you know, I have no other friend personally who's out on the street who is a community outreach with one of the local health systems. But, you know, I can't say everything that that person's doing, but I know that they're connected to some of the issues going on with as far as sex workers who are out on the street.
There should be night outreach.
Well, look, yeah. Can I just add one more thing?
Yeah, I'm going to give everybody, let's take about 45 seconds for final contact information. Let's roll around real quick because
I just want to say that there is a myriad of issues to be dealt with. This is huge, and it's not going to be solved overnight. It's the people who are being pimped, the drugs, the mental health, all of it is huge. So you kind of have to just pick where you want to start and what you want to be directed at because you have to be focused. Mm-hmm. So that's all I want to say about that.
Captain.
Women do have unique vulnerabilities in Skid Row, on the streets, and in the programs apparently as well. And I do appreciate this show and you bringing some of these issues to light. And I think more needs to be discussed. Yeah. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. And then you want to give contact information for your organization?
I'm a tree planter and I have an organization called Industrial District Green. And you can learn more about trees being planted and cared for in the Skid Row area in eastern part of downtown. You can go to industrialdistrictgreen.org.
Okay. All right.
May I please give a little shout out for my radio show, Lady Takes the Mic. And
when's the next one?
Yeah, that's a good question. as soon as I get my articles done, then I can start focusing on my... I also have a national column called Skid Row from a Woman's Perspective, and that's in the People's Tribune, and I also write for the connection with the Los Angeles Community Action Network. So just stay tuned. I'll keep you up to date. I also blog on Facebook.
And that's important show. We'll give you guys
a chance creating a blog
really talk about... these issues. Concentrate on these issues.
Also, there's Downtown Women's Action Coalition. We have a meeting tomorrow afternoon. If folks want to call LA CAN, you know, they can get more information. But Downtown Women's Action Coalition, we work for women's needs.
Okay, thank you for tuning in to the Coonrown Report. And from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, my co-host, Earlene Anthony, I would like to extend a special thanks to Suzette Shaw, my Ann McCall, Catherine Menini, and all of the guests that's sitting in here. I close out with the song that opens the show, I Dream of Peace, by Deborah Penberthy.
Okay, we have another.
I found this letter. It was written 20 years ago.